Nancy and Christopher Beck at the end of an evening meeting let us know dance, which was basically religiously oriented, but led us through the ancient maze.
Remember?
Yes. And was a very wonderful ending to that particular evening. And I think it was the next day. I know the meaningful worship, which was the end of the conference for that weekend, was one which was highly moving. And I'm quite sure that was the year. I'm quite sure that was the year that Herta Rosenblatt created a poem out of what was had gone on. And we, I at least, sat there mixed with two reactions. One, although I do not think of taking notes at a meeting for worship, but wishing that I had my notebook to take down her poem as she said it. And yet, another side of my brain was saying, but if you were taking it down, you wouldn't be feeling it. But it was very much a part of that very, very special meeting for worship. Last night it occurred to me that these special meetings for worship, I suppose in the terms of last night's meeting, could have been called true mandoralas. And the other one that I remember so well, Anna Morris was presiding. It may have been the year that Bernard Phillips spoke. I'm not sure of that, but I do know that it was one of those peak meetings. And it just kept building higher and higher and going deeper and deeper at the same time. And I sat there inwardly thinking, this can't go on. Anna better break it. It can't go on. But of course she's wise in this kind of thing, and she was sensitive enough to let it keep building. And although in one sense it was a long meeting for worship, but of course in another sense it was exactly right because of the insights that we were getting, and that just made a tremendous ending to that conference.
I remember. It wasn't the time when we didn't break for the meeting between the meetings, the meeting that was happening before the worship, but we just kept right on going because it was so powerful. Was that time? It was like 2 hours or 2 hours and a half long. It was absolutely terrific. That might have been. I can't remember. It was very moving.
That was on my first conference.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. I can't remember.
It was truly. And when it was over,
It was also with Mary Caroline Richards. That was a little later, but it was the same kind of thing.
Well,
into the
that would
have
been
in our meeting for worship, if it doesn't in a way affect the local meetings for worship, because I find when I came back to where I grew up in South Jersey in the Woodstown meeting. There are so many people in the local meetings who grew up as Methodists and Baptists, and they appreciate the philosophy of Quakerism, but many of them don't realize what we call the centering down period. And that's when it ought to be in the first 15, 20 minutes or so, when the group really feels together. And what have you folks sensed when you go to local meetings? Or am I just...
I think Herta had something which is related to that. It's not exactly what happened to your local meeting, but when you wrote, you shared the thought that you came out of a meditation group or a group discussion of whom members of the meeting were part. And the Thayer Smiths were part of it, so it must have been special and cared.
Of course you can.
But you brought some of that to the conference.
Yes.
Of course, I forgot.
You see. And what really happened, and nobody mentioned that was right from the beginning. I think you had started it in Haddonfield, and that's when Florence Villeneuve came back. And in local meetings, we started these small groups, cell groups, or whatever we called them. And we started reading Preface to Prayer, The Choice is Always Ours. And so members of the meeting met every other week. And as usual, I like to have meetings in my house. I don't know. Most people think it's a bother. And so I was the center for that, for years. And of course, then you have then a group who meets regularly, intimately. And the same group then settles down in the meeting for worship. There's already a power there, You don't have to mention this at all, but when you... just like when the fire started, it's easy, If you have to just bring an action and try and set it going, it's a little more difficult in that respect. Now, I had sometimes... when the question came up in the conference about this darkness and this whole thing about Hitler, I thought, yes, but not one of you really knew. You see, and we knew in the country and in the society, and having to come to terms with that whole thing myself, I couldn't speak, and I was not willing already to accept that as myself. You see, the way you are trying to do. And, but it was utterly different, On the other hand, perhaps my very presence there, you all knew, made you all conscious on it. There is darkness, even amongst like people. And I had, of course, to battle the thing, how could this happen? Before we came here on Thursday night, we saw on Channel 13 the second part of the Family Opperman, and it brought it all back again. Now, he personally didn't have... Edgar lost his job right away, and he is only half Jewish and was. Of course, I had committed the unspeakable crime, race tension, So there, but what happened to these otherwise nice boys, that brutality is there and can be so easily brought out. And when I saw that movie, I said afterwards, of course we couldn't sleep, and it all came back. I said, well, I wonder, in one sense it might be all right that this is being shown. On the other hand, there are always elements who want violence. Don't they learn something? don't they learn with being shown these movies how easy it is for her to be Buddha and to get that power? You see, that's the other side. And the people who produce it, of course, they think only for here is a mirror, how easy it is to do. But what about those who ha-ha-ha, you know? So there's the dilemma.
Does anybody have the feeling that the result of coming to a conference as a rich town meeting, I don't think that's our meeting.
It happens.
I don't think they want to hear about it from us, from Duncan, from me. I don't know.
Well, it depends a little bit what vocabulary you use.
Yes. And you can sometimes have insight as a result of coming to the conference, which you can share in meeting, but isn't about the meeting. I mean, you're wiser. You've been through some experiences with communication.
Well,
so that maybe you enrich the meeting.
But you also, I mean, what did for me, and I really think for all of us, even if the meetings were not ready, we still got the courage because we knew this is here. We are not alone. You see. And look, in my case, when we first started having these little groups every other week, my children, teenagers, went on all year through, summer or not, or what. And Chris would say, oh goodness, Mom has her meetings, we have to be quiet.
Well, I've been thinking about that this morning in the group that I am a part of, Margaret Grace. And I felt that it could be done if we could take some of the people like Margaret Grace and others once in a while to go into a local group and use it more like the people used to call a clearance. You know, when I grew up, clearance meant just for, are you getting married and you're going to have a clearance committee, and it just was, but it could be. I think it would be very wise if the executive committee would consider experimenting with taking this type of thing on the local level, not talking too much about the psychology, but let it come through. Because I noticed that in the group that I've been a part of. And the way, even group movement, you see, and group singing needs to be more a part of our local meetings.
Well, with your cultural, or whatever you call it, isolations or what. Now, we happen to live in Montclair in Southend, in a very colored community. And Montclair had a YWCA, an affiliated one, that was, it was not a real Y, because it had been founded for the Children of the Health upon Clearing. So it had a white advisory board, and then, all right, and then it was made the first black self-government Y. And there were one white person on the board, me. So you went and go to Washington when there was a reading one, you had to pop up to be visible in that thing. But living where I was, fine, right, so my friends and so forth. And that goes back when I first came to this country. I lived in East Orange, next door was Orange, no black people. I wasn't in the country longer than a few weeks when a old black lady comes to the side door with a jar of chicken soup and says, my child, I have watched you. You are bringing up your children all right. You don't have anybody in this country. I am going to be your black nanny. And your children are going to have the privileges my black grandchildren have. Brother, when you don't know anybody, Well, of course, Buddy later became our dentist from here and so forth. So then, Montclair Meeting had, like many of us during the war later, from those weekends of foreign students from, International House in New York. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. He's in service committee or whatever, so, you know. Well, one day I get a call and they said, you know, we had a committee meeting. We have been doing this and felt marvelous getting these people from Africa, from South America, but we haven't done a thing about the black people in the community. What is even worse, none of us knows anybody whom we might ask. Don't you? I said, sure, dozens, you know. But that's how this goes, you know, and I don't know where it came from, where it was, but it was really Nana who had done it in the beginning, you know. And so then when I met you at Cape May, you know, then, well...
I'd like to sort of put on the record the permanent influence that the group conversation method has had in the conference. Because ever since we have had small groups before, discussion groups and creative activities groups, but later combined them. But I think that most people who participate in groups in the conference now still start off their weekend in much the same way, saying something about their backgrounds or their childhood memories to help them get acquainted and get to know each other and really know who they are and who other people in the group are. I think it's been a permanent part of our conference.
And sometime it might be valuable to get people who are going to be the group leaders to look at it a little more widely than simply telling each other a little bit of our background, because we found that that sharing memories of our childhood between ages of, say, 5 and 12 releases a lot of energy, positive energy, and they're surprised at how they feel afterwards. And we usually we don't have the group that is the sharing of early memories more than a half hour or so, just because it depends on the goal of the group, whether they go into something race relations or something else, you see, because it could be any goal. Mm-hmm. I would be glad to sit down with some time. Mm-hmm. And now on the 10th of June, we've been asked to train the staffs of three organizations that are working for children under stress, some of whom have been in jail. And the person who's working with me, we have done our work with lately in a group, what we call our living room gathering, which is another way of using it, but that's folded up. But so I think that could be done. I wonder if when I meet again with the group that I'm in now, with Margaret Grace, I might ask them if they feel that the things we have done there could be experimented with on a local level sometime, just to see if it could really work.
Well, I think it has been done some. I know Mary Hopkins tried very hard to get something like this going, to provide a speakers bureau, people who would go out from the conference and talk about the subjects that the conference had talked about, or use the creative kinds of expression that the conference has. And I know she did it at Radnor, but it never really gelled. We didn't get many responses. If you could kind of force a situation like that in your own quarter or your own meeting, but you couldn't. They didn't come in and request it the way we hoped.
Experimenting. Now, you see, for 3 months each of 5 years, the Friends General Conference sent me to all places, all regions of this country. And it was only because Larry Miller, how did I know it would be successful? How did he know? It was a, then he sent out, he says, well, let's try it. And he sent out letters to people at local meetings between here and Florida. And
some meetings bought it and some didn't.
Well, yes.
Why,
but,
I don't know.
But
it was great where it worked.
It was enough to make us see that we ought to go further.
Right.
And so I'm only saying, try it experimentally.
Mm-hmm.
Even
mm-hmm.
if you...
Right. Let's think a little bit. We ought to probably begin to come to a close. But what other thoughts have we had about what's ahead for the conference? What routes might we take? Where might we go from here? I mean, we've got a tremendous thing. Does anybody have strong feelings about it? Would you like more of the same? Would you hope, we're all aware that there's a new group in New England. We know that there's a second group in California. We know that both Washington and New York didn't have meetings this year, didn't have conference weekends for one reason or another. So there's kind of a feeling that maybe some of them may be having trouble with a topic, which was, what was the topic?
That's been a difficult one to frame this year. Eleanor, I think one of the things we've got to realize is we're no longer one of the few groups doing this kind of work.
Yes.
There are a lot of other groups that we are in direct competition with. There's a Spiritual Life, Spiritual Frontiers conference going on, fellowship going, conference going on this very same weekend, a very big one. There are all kinds of other conferences that are not like ours, because they're very loyal to ours, but they have many of the same ingredients, and they are attracting many of the people that would otherwise come to us. Now, maybe we are going to be content with being a smaller conference, but I think one of the things we're not doing is putting enough attention and money, because now it costs more money than it used to, into getting top flight speakers. When I look back and see the roster of the really top-notch speakers that we had, we've had good speakers, but we've gone overboard in thinking we needed to save money and we had to use talent from within and that kind of stuff, which is okay. But I think we've got to start spiraling out if we want to maintain a strong conference, because there's no way of getting around it. People do come to hear a name of somebody who's writing or speaking in and who will attract them here. I feel very strongly about that.
I should say something about the other side from the point of view of the executive committee, who have talked over the pros and cons of this considerably, and that is that on occasion when we've had a very famous speaker, the tendency is for the speaker to talk about the subject, the speech that he's given 16 times already, and that makes him not pick up the vibrations from the conference. And so isn't really tuned in to what's happening here, and in effect can keep something important from happening because we don't know it's possible. And I think there was a sense that maybe sometimes we needed to have our own executive members be the speakers in order that the conference be able to express itself. Which, if we have Joseph Campbell, it's pretty hard to do because he's all set. He knows what he knows, and he knows that's why we asked him to come. And therefore, he needs to give it. But we need something more than that. So I think there's a given.
Could I say that in the 5 years when I was chairman, that we had some good speakers, but there were a couple of times when we just struggled to find a person who would fit our needs. And in those days, we hadn't realized that you had to start over a year ahead of time in order to get, quote unquote, an important person. But I think we found that even if we had, in our judgmental way, a person who was not as gifted, perhaps, or didn't have the charisma or whatever that other speakers had, that there is this essence in the conference that seemed to carry it, and people got a great deal out of it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important.
And there's this quote, and I don't know where it came from, but I think here it is. There is a luminous, magnetic environment, speaking of the conference, that surrounds us, that does affect our beingness. Is this too esoteric? But I think that this is true, that there's this feeling among the members. There are enough seasoned ones here that kind of permeate the conference as a whole, and that we do, that people do grow, mm-hmm. even with a less experienced.
I'm not quarreling with that at all, and I feel strongly, and I would rather settle for a smaller conference.
Yes.
And just go for that, but I don't like the schizophrenic feeling that I get, that we're not bringing in enough members, we're not pulling our weight, we're not, the conference isn't growing, what's the matter? We do have intimations of that, and I just think that we're going to have to work harder.
But how do you work harder?
Now,
this conference, if it had been possible,
we would have had a chance to talk. Let him say, don't forget me,
Wait. Jane Brown gave me a bawling out to judge for the last two or three years, not this year, and that's why the bawling out. I've given her office about 20 names of people that I've just met personally, and I tell you, this person, I don't even mention it to the person, I just say, send them an application, and I can briefly tell them. And that has worked out well. Some of those people are here today from this last 3 years of kind of putting feelers out. This year I didn't. There are tides that control your life, and I think there's a general tide that's controlling our lives now, and that she didn't get the list, and she gave me a tiny bawling out. And I felt remiss, but I also feel that, we could all be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't be pointing a finger at me.
I just wanted to mention that I also gave names to in a sense, that started out with the wife of our state senator, Mrs. Huey. We needed the post office, and I gave her the showed her the goddess post last year. Result of that, now, society with a capital S, and so forth. She wanted a copy of Inward Light.
Mm.
She has a friend who was a Episcopalian minister, and he's working now with you. She would dearly have loved to come. She couldn't. She had them. But that's the way, and there are a few. I'm living in such a small community, and we are meeting, but there are at least three people who would be interested. One is an artist. I had her in my haiku group for years because she is completely unworthy, but haiku would be, and so friends sing, and it's that sort of thing.
Well, I think it's terribly important for all of us to share this incredible thing that we have available to us.
Yes, but you see, I could do it with that book. Then they read it, and they wanted copies of Inward Light, and you had given me some, so I could do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And,
how big do you think we should try to get?
We should go home.
Does it matter?
I
still feel.
If that can happen to you, why doesn't it happen to me? Take me along next year or something like that.
That's nice. What, Rachel?
I want to ask, how do you know those other groups that you spoke of that attract the people? How do you know that they get as much from it as they do from this type of thing? I'm thinking of Herb White, for instance, a Quaker in New York, and he went to a conference of this sort with Ferguson, who wrote the Clarion Conspiracy, and he paid $150 for, and he came away disappointed. Because I don't know why, but I'm only saying we're not sure. But my other question is, because this fits so well, the philosophy of our part of Quakerism, not that we should confine it to Quakers by any means, but if we can concentrate a little bit more on getting the local Quaker meetings to send people up, but if we experimented with this next year with, say, four or five local meetings and had this type of thing happen in the small in the local meeting, and then have them send people up here because they would have seen a a piece of it in their own meeting.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe we.
So I hope that when the executive committee meets, that you will bring that up. I think it's to experiment, not next year, but beginning this fall.
Well, Rachel, they may think they have already experimented. I'm not sure.
Experimented on the local level?
Yeah.
How?
With Mary Hopkins' effort.
Well, what did she do?
They made a flyer. They got the number of people who were willing to go to monthly meetings.
And do
listed
what?
Them. Give them a mini experience of FCRP. And
well, you can't do that just once.
Well, really, I mean, this was a flyer that went to all the meetings in the yearly meeting. I don't know how much it went outside. I think it had lists of names, but anyway, they were available if anybody wanted it. And we would fit a program to the needs of the meeting. We would try to relate something that would mean something to them. And there was very little response.
Because they don't know. They don't respond. I think if we could hand-pick three or four meetings and with enough people down there, maybe some of our folks who are from someplace, and if, for instance, Woodstown, they wouldn't... we would just simply say that, will you, during the year, have this type of thing happen?
Rachel, already I've got an idea that I've been proposing to myself: the whole summer adult classes in our meeting. The space
we've already done it.
And we're doing the Quaker dialogue thing. We don't know each other.
Right.
I know.
Well, Quaker dialogue has a good title. How can anybody object to that?
Can't object to it.
Are you using the little blue booklet on Quaker?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll use it.
We need to think.
Well, thank you.
Well, I think it was good, and I don't know whether we turn this off. Should we turn this off over here?